Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In today's episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about something I've been struggling with, working with, challenged by, and that's not getting so freaking angry about what's going on. I share a little bit of my musings, philosophy, meditations around not hating what's going on, not hating the people who are making it happen. And then after that, I am going to take you to a meditation class, since I say that meditating is the way that we're going to figure out how to see our right role. So we'll do a nice meditation from class at Ishta the other day. So I hope you enjoy both. Feel free to drop me a line, and you can do that at patreon.com. And at Patreon, you can also support the podcast. So I hope you'll do that. Thanks a lot. Enjoy. These are difficult times. They test our resolve. They test our training. They test our understanding. They test our wisdom. We find ourselves in a situation where any reasonable human could accept hatred as an appropriate response. We face meanness, mendacity, contempt, bullying, and provocation from our political representatives and the investors and networks who have influenced them. I have to keep telling myself this, so I thought I would share it with you. While it's tempting, or even natural, to hate the perpetrators of these behaviors, doing so misses the mark in terms of both spiritual development and practical outcome. Both parties of the U.S. government are finding that out right now. In forgetting the poor and unfortunate, such as workers who lost their jobs, the Democratic Party lost its soul as the great society party that represented those who weren't rich and successful. In trying to figure out a way to appeal to people who weren't rich and successful, the GOP supported a retelling of the news that fabricated an us versus them paradigm against Muslims, against Mexicans, against Black Lives, and so on. The resulting propaganda outlet, Fox, now keeps fully half the country, including the president, confused about facts through innuendo and spin. Listening to Democrats' mea culpa post-2016 and new commitment to address inequality is late but promising. Unfortunately, successful GOP strategies, including massive political engineering by the Koch brothers, have shut them out of most seats in government. Their ridicule and hatred of the right blinded them to the strategy and left them powerless. They are now having to fight to win back representation positions at every level. Listening to the GOP blatantly twisting facts and intentions is shocking. It is testing legitimate journalism's skills and protocols, including such absurdities as when to call something lying. When Trump lies continuously as part of a strategy that he purports makes him a great deal maker. Thanks to Fox and other right-wing news and conspiracy sources and Facebook, GOP supporters can't even be blamed for not knowing how much deceit their representatives use. But for all their success, the GOP is providing nothing to their believers on the ground, except those who are rich and successful, their real contingent. They attack and weaken the ACA program, Obamacare, a program hatched by a conservative think tank, driving up costs, jeopardizing care for millions. They cut taxes to the rich, which they now use as justification for cutting Social Security and Medicare. They demolish international relations and domestic social cooperation and mutual respect. It is a every white man for himself mindset. And just as the ordinary people felt abandoned by the Democrats, they will one day realize the GOP is not out to help them either. The GOP lost their soul and will lose their reign and maybe even lead us into a civil war in the interim. So why not hate these people? Aren't they enemies? It's a bad idea because it distorts your vision. The Democrats abandoned those in need because the Republicans were winning. They became Republican light. Bill Clinton was an effective president in many ways, but set in motion the party confusion that ironically concluded with Hillary Clinton's defeat. The Republicans created a deal with the devil, first in the form of evangelicals, then as radical libertarians, then as white nationalists. Aaron Sorkin's TV show, The Newsroom, is a beautiful calling out of how this plays out as the hypocrisy of the Tea Party. I know this kind of talk can just make someone frustrated or more angry, but I wanted to be clear that I see the reasons that would justify hating. If you're paying attention, you're going to be upset. I get it. I feel it. I've screamed about politics this week. So I'm not calling for being above the fray by ignoring it. Okay, then. So what's the alternative, Peter? The language of the Course in Miracles is straightforward on this, so I'm going to use that first. It calls the alternative forgiveness and says that forgiveness brings miracles, a shift in what you see. To get back to yoga, which is my topic, in yoga, this idea is similar, but the words are in Sanskrit. We say practice brings viveka, or seeing things as they truly are, and Kaivalya, living in the freedom of connection with your true self. What is seeing things as they really are? It's seeing us as connected. Yoga philosophy frames it as there being a force propelling the universe and considers that force aware, just as we are aware. But like we are aware of our narrow human perspective, the universe is aware in some cosmic way of everything it is. And as part of this universe too, we all share in and are part of that consciousness. From a physics perspective, it's pretty similar. Seen in the aggregate, we are the continual emerging expansion begun at the Big Bang. The way we gain credence of this idea is through how we feel when we practice meditation. Lao Tzu describes it beautifully in the Tao Te Ching. In Brian Brown Walker's translation, the first sutra, the first chapter, says, "Therefore, to see beyond boundaries, to the subtle heart of things, dispense with names, with concepts, with expectations and ambitions and differences. Tao and its many manifestations arise from the same source, subtle wonder within mysterious darkness. This is the beginning of all understanding." This great evolution that we're part of is like a great drama. The Sanskrit word for this is lila, and it's usually translated as the dance of life. It's a poetic way of saying expanded motion of the Big Bang and the evolution of life that includes what we think of as us. We find ourselves as living and dying entities in a role within that dance. Yet we are always also the great consciousness. We are altogether the whole thing. Here's where that idea of connection is useful. Seeing the other, the prospectively hated one, in viveka, is to see them also as the consciousness, the whole, to see them playing a role in the lila. There's a subtle but important nuance here. We see them as part of the great consciousness, or to use a classical synonym for that, the divine. But we also need to act within the world to address our best assessment of our role. So we take on the evil that we see. But we understand the perpetrator is also divine and performing his or her own role. It's not the actor, but the action that we fight. The ancient story, the Ramayana, is the tale of part of the Godhead, as Hindus would speak of it. The divine, wise sustainer of the universe comes to earth in human form to battle an insurmountable evil that is threatening all the goodness of mankind. The story has Rama, this divine being incarnated, encountering demon after demon. In each case, Rama first tries reasoning, then force. Each time, though, he acknowledges what other actions brought this evil being about. Usually it's some past karmic or historic action. The demonic action is the debt being paid. It's not easy to be a demon, apparently. It includes great pain. Some of the demons recognize this immediately, and they're freed of their debt. Some only do so at the moment they're defeated by Rama. Rama, though, never turns to hatred and anger, but always to right action. When it dies, he blesses the demon and honors its true self. To provide contrast to this, his brother, Lakshman, is often full of anger and acts too quickly or misunderstands what's at play. I bring up this epic because it provides a model for remaining noble and honorable and connected to our divine nature in the face of evil. Providing an example is a purpose of myth. Another noteworthy aspect of the Ramayana is that the encounter between Rama and the evil he must conquer requires that he work with others and overcome withering obstacles on his journey. And despite being a divine being, the nature of the Leela, the drama of life, has its laws, and it goes on according to cause and effect. So even Rama has ups and downs, and it ultimately requires 14 years to reach his objective. It reminds us that life is not about getting things the way that you want them and then living happily ever after. That's not myth, that's fairy tale. Life is about the arduous journey and practicing seeing the divine in everything as you play your role in trying to make things the best you can. People who knew the political climate prior to the 1980s often say that politicians would argue in session but were friends when off duty. There was a spirit of camaraderie and a commitment to solving problems. The generation since then is much more engaged in blame and stonewalling, in, quote, starving the beast, unquote, and tactics like that. But there's a new generation now. And like that of the pre-1980s, many of those running for office now spent time in the military, where there is no place for political posturing. Secondly, young people and their idealism is also a powerful force for calling things as they are. This should give all of us hope and let us tackle the challenges with honor and nobility that warrants that idealism. We also need to remember that it could take a lot of time. Or perhaps some crisis will speed things up, but we might not want to wish for that, as it could take a violent form as easily as not. The entrenchment of wealth inequality alone will give the status quo a lot of sticking power. So what do we do? We will need to keep tuning into our true self, our whole consciousness, via meditation and other practices, to continually see what our role will be in the ongoing challenge that is the nature of life. To continually remind ourselves what really is, to forgive the demons but take on the fight, to trust in our power to work miracles, not happily ever after miracles, but bridging divides and seeing the good in others' miracles, reprogramming away from Rama's brother's reaction, anger, rash action, and hatred, will let us see more clearly. Seeing the oneness in others, and the causes behind even our enemies' actions will help us reprogram as divine incarnations and act with integrity in these difficult times. Hari Om Tat Sat. May you always see the truth in front of you. Namaste.
Namaste. This is meditation class, Saturday morning, New York, USA. Welcome. They're at the front, Jenny. They're at the front desk. We had a kirtan the other night. It was fun.
It's beautiful. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. We did an EP, so there are five songs on it, and we're mixing it right now. We were hoping to be finished mixing by now, but probably we'll be finished mixing in 3 weeks. Probably. I mean, we need a couple of hours. So we just have to find those couple of hours in the next few weeks. I make a podcast and I listen to a fair number of podcasts, and a lot of the people that I'm listening to in the podcasting world, some in politics, some in spiritual topics, I'm getting really frustrated with the nature of what's going on. That it's like more and more and more and more and more of this stuff that's troubling. And I think that we are all, you know, dealing with that in our own ways, and we have to figure out our own relationship to that thing. We have to figure out what is it that we're supposed to, quote unquote, do, and maybe we can talk a little more about what supposed to means, but what we're supposed to do in response to that. And in the yoga sadhana, in the yoga practice, we live life, and depending on what school of yoga you're coming from or what you're perspective is in that regard, and maybe I'll just talk about Ishta since that's where we are. We're going to do a practice that puts you in a state that allows for some time where you stop the constant syncing up with that outside world, and when you stop, there's a shift in you. And then from that shifted place, you can come back into the world. And in having made that shift, now you're like a different person in a different world. I came upon this like software update the other day because it keeps coming on my phone. You know, do you want to update to the next thing? It's like you meditate, you get the upgrade, and then you come back into life. Right, and you've got this new information, this new programming that helps you figure stuff out. Right? So that's the yoga practice. So it requires both living and pausing from that, the living cycle. Right? There's a guy who has a podcast, but I knew him first more from his blog, and his name is Seth Godin, and he's like a business guru, right? Marketing guru. But his general notion is pretty cool because he's not so much about making millions of dollars as it is about making something really meaningful, doing something in your life that is you and doing it well, which is, you know, another nice way to say the kinds of things that we say in yoga. But in his blog today, he talked about triggers and cycles, that we get triggered around something and that starts a cycle of response. And it relates very much to the practice I wanted to do today, which is about establishing the right relationship between all the different aspects of living, right? That we as individuals are in a constant movement among the parts of life, right? And there's, in the tantric view of how things work, even an elemental force that is called movement, called wind, right? And this element, which sometimes gets called air, resides in the heart center. And it's this place of when two things are coming into contact as they move, how do they interact? How do you create a harmonious interaction within this windiness? So when we're doing our living, we're just naturally encountering that because it's the nature of life. This wind is a part of our nature. So we can either tackle the relationship component, or we can try to ignore it, in which case it feels like the world is doing stuff to us. In fact, we can try to find a more harmonious understanding of what's going on, and then it's more like being in the stream of things, right? It's like you're on the wind, or the wind's at your back, or all those kind of nice things, right? That you feel in the flow of things, rather than being attacked by things. So in our going through life, and the reason I brought up Seth Godin is very often something comes about that serves as this kind of a trigger, this thing that bugs us, or this thing that sets us down a path, and it's usually something emotional that gets triggered, and then we have a whole story around that thing, you know? And so the thing happened, and it was just a thing, right? It was right there, like somebody on the subway did something to you, or your loved one said something that's, and you thought it was critical, right? So then, instead of it just being there and gone, right? It's there, and that was the trigger for this whole long story of my whole life since I was 8 years old, right? And so then you replay that whole thing with all the emotions of it, and why is the world so mean to me, and all of these kinds of things. So you're just getting sucked, like hooked, right, into the mental stuff, the emotional stuff, and you stay there, and it just perpetuates this same kind of relationship to life, where you don't have any new information. You're not upgrading the system. You're just replaying the same patterns, right? So in our practice today, we're going to use a kriya, and kriya is letting your mind go down a different pathway, to take a pathway that is more aligned with the way we'd like things to be, to get us to this place of a different state of mind, that state of mind of not being playing out in the world, but having the pause, right? So in our practice for today, we're going to use a mantra and a visualization. The mantra is Satyam. And Satyam is a really two-part mantra, where Yam is the vibration of this elemental force of the wind, the heart center's abode. And Sat means bring this into a state of clarity, a state of truth, a state of experiencing things as they really are. Sat is like such a big word. It literally means what is, what it is, right? The way things are. Okay? So if you can bring that to this center that's responsible for negotiating all the movement we do in our lives, then you are able to be in the flow of things, in harmony with things. Okay? Questions about that so far? Okay. So the second piece of the Kriya is a visualization. And we do this two different ways here at Ishta, and I'm gonna kind of combine them a little bit. So the primary thing that I'd love for you to focus on is a feeling in the heart center, like a glow, energy, light. When you breathe in, the light expands. When you breathe out, it focuses back into a point. So it's like, you know, three-dimensional, expanding and focusing in. Sat, yang. So on the pulse of your breath, recite silently the mantra, sat, yang, and visualize this light expanding and coming back, okay? The thing is, we have these triggers and they're not only outside, they're also inside. Some thought comes up, right? Something comes up and says, hey, why did Wendy say that way? And so all of a sudden it's like, whoosh, hooked in the story, right? So today, if something comes up, we're gonna do the other version of the Satyam, which is to allow that whole muck, that whole mess, right, to go away, right? That's Sanskrit, right? And in letting it go away, it's not that you're diminishing its importance or anything. It's that for this moment, we're going to step out of the cycle and allow for us to go into the quiet place to do the system upgrade, right? And then we can come back. And then if that thing is still important in our lives, it will certainly pop up again in some other way. And the more that you start noticing it, releasing the sort of emotional hookiness of it, and just start to see it more clearly, the more you can address it, right? And take it on in a practical way, right? So we're sort of breaking the pattern of the triggering and the cycles using sat, yam, right? So this thing happens, and instead of getting sucked in, sat, she didn't really mean it that way, yam, right? Let it out. And then come back and see if you can feel this pulse in a more clear way, a brighter way, right? So that ultimately when you feel like, okay, there's just like, I just feel, right? Like no words are necessary. I don't have to think about anything else. Then you're in that opportune place where you can surrender. You can allow yourself to let go. We usually take our meditations up into Ajna Chakra, up into the middle of the head, which traditionally, for lots of different kinds of practice, is this auspicious place to allow your mind to go into altered states, meaning different brainwave patterns, different focuses of the mind, that you just are bringing your attention here, surrendering. If you're calm enough because nothing's bugging you, then your mind just goes into a different mode, right? You're still there, you're still aware, but it feels different, okay? So we could take our meditation after we feel good up here. However, if you've been feeling very scattered, very anxious, very fearful about things that are going on, and it feels maybe a little dangerous to let go, you can allow today your meditation to stay in the heart center and just be bask in this glow that you've created, right? If even that feels a little unstable, use this mudra ahankara by bringing the pad of your thumb and the pad of your index finger together and then set it right at the heart center, okay? So you can do that, and that will again keep you focused more here, where you're still a person and you're an individual and you feel like you're in control a bit more, right? If you don't have any kind of anxiety or whatever, allow your focus to move here it will be a little bit more productive for you. One is not better than the other, they're just different. Questions about any of that?
Question that's sort of unrelated but related. So during the week with Alan, when we were doing Brahma Pradana, he recommended if you're feeling spacey, instead of doing Ankara Mudra, to touch the thumb and the fourth finger. And I was just curious about the energetic differences of using one versus the other.
This one is holding you in the heart center. This one is balancing it, the elements, bringing you more groundedness. So. Yeah, you could try both and see. And you could ask Al to distinguish too, since he divined that practice. Cool. Other questions? Yeah, Jen. I like the new dude.
Thanks. Triggered, but you're not triggered because something has happened. You're triggered because you don't know what's happening. Like, how does this relate?
Like instability.
Yeah, like an instability, like, or like a silence.
It still develops a story. It's like, this is not okay. Something's supposed to be happening, or something's supposed to be clear. And it takes us out of just being in the moment and being present and receptive for what's to come. Right, which is our nature. The world is that, right? We just tell stories about it that make it sound like it's not supposed to happen that way. You know, oh, I'm supposed to have been here by this time, right? Or, you know, she's not supposed to treat me that way, or whatever, you know, all the stories. So the fact of the matter is that we never know what's going on. It's just going on. Right? Yeah. And in Sanskrit, there's this phrase, abhyasa vairagyam, you know, which means you do your practice and you don't care, you can't be concerned with the outcome. You can't be focusing on that. Like, you just have to do. It's hard. That's the practice, right? That's why it's a practice. It's not a spontaneous enlightenment. I mean, sometimes you have those, like, little epiphanies. But if you like think, oh, now I got it, you're going to be surprised in about, like 5 minutes, right? So we're just all just doing. Great question. Anything else? Who's new to class? Great, welcome. So the menu is, we have this talk that we just had. And then we're going to do a tiny bit of asana, just so that it's easy to sit, just some simple things. And then we will do this satyam meditation. I'll guide us through that, so you don't have to remember what I said. And then we'll sit for 18 minutes in silence. During that time, I'm going to pass by and do Shaktipat, which just tries to bring your energy more generally up here. It's like a little assist, like training wheels, a little bit. If you don't want me to do that, just say so. I don't touch you or anything like that. And then at the end, part of the Ishta practice is this notion of you go to this place, this, you know, system upgrade zone, so that you can then come back into life and have it impact your living, that you bring this wisdom back in. And we do that by using the energy headquarters, the chakras, as a way of focusing that wisdom back in. So we're going to come down energy center by energy center. We'll use a mantra when we do that for each one. They're kind of long, so you probably won't know them if you've never been in class before, but we'll do them in a kind of a chanting style, just reciting them four times to a little bit of melody. And then we'll do Shavasana for a minute, and then you'll be upgraded. So it's like probably a new color on your user interface. All right. Okay. No questions? Come on to all fours, please.
I got
And set your wrists right below your shoulders and your knees under your hips so you've got a nice stable structure to work from. And on your inhale, curl your toes under, arch and open, expanding through your chest. As you exhale, take the tops of your feet to the floor and press the leg around through your lower back. And then continue to flow between those two poses. Now, at first, when you're practicing, you're just trying to get the general overview of things, the shapes of things. But as you get more and more acquainted with all of that, you'll notice that little subtle things make a difference. So one of the little subtle things that you might do even here, as we're doing this premeditative asana, trying to start to pull more inward, is to take your fingers rather than spreading them out, to draw them to each other. So it's just that each finger is related to one of the elemental forces of water, fire, air, space. You're just bringing them back together again. If that bothers your wrists, you can just keep your hands spread. After your next inhale, on the exhale, send your seat back to your heels, to child's pose. I'm going to call it seal to distinguish it for these premeditative asana. And with your arms reaching forward and your seat back, see if you can get a good sense of a line that runs through your center. We're going to be releasing some things out the crown through this line. But in every breath, we inspire our energy that we use for living. So you can visualize that as a kriya now. Inhale, visualize energy coming in from the universe through the crown to the base. Exhale, visualize that radiating out, almost like you're making a hologram that is you. Now on your next inhale, come all the way back up to that upward part of cat and cow. And on your exhale, send your seat back to your heels. And we'll see if we can use this kriya in motion. So inhale, energy in crown to base. Exhale, that energy radiates through to become your system, your energy system. And then do that two more times. And if you're new and it's too much to hold all this stuff in your head, it starts to get too much intellectual, just choose the movement. After your next exhale, inhale, come right up on your knees. I call this Bali pose, like an island Bali. Exhale all the way back to the seal, the child's pose. Inhale up into that upward part of the cat-cow and lower your hips toward cobra pose if it's okay in your back. Otherwise, don't go too far or bend your elbows. Exhale back to the child's pose or seal. Inhale, Bali. Exhale, seal. Inhale, up and over to cobra. Or stop with a cat. Exhale, seal. I'll do it in front of you. Inhale, Bali. Exhale, seal. Inhale, cow, or let your hips lower to cobra. You can bend your elbows if it's too much for your back. Exhale, seal. And then see if you can layer that kriya. And you can use a mantra with this one. Inhale, sa, energy in from crown to base. Exhale, hum, as that energy radiates out and transforms space into you. Inhale, cobra, sa. Inspiration. Exhale, hum. Radiating energy. Do that one more time. And doing this kriya should leave a feeling of spaciousness, like you've created enough energy working in the right ways to let your body feel like it's in its natural state, energized. Open.
You can pause when you get to the seal. The next pose we're going to do is to turn our chakra system upside down to bring the head more in contact with the gravity of the earth. So you can do that with a headstand if you have a headstand in your practice. Otherwise, use downward facing dog to lower your head and raise your hips. Or you can do a forearm version of downward facing dog if that's better in your wrists. Tension of moving your energy in this way is really powerful asana. Coming out of it can very often feel like, okay, I'm ready to meditate. So you can really try to keep your focus in as you lower back down and sit back onto your heels. And just feel the next pulses of your breath. And how they move your state of mind. We're going to do just a couple more asana for our base so that it's easy to sit. So gently open your eyes, but keep your focus inward. Sit over onto the right side of your feet so that your feet are off on the left and your right foot can, if it feels okay, hook over your left ankle so it goes underneath the other way. Yeah. Great. And then set your hand down on the side where your feet are and raise your right arm up. So you've got this nice lock in our base, and then we're expanding through the right side of your torso. And if this feels sort of thrown way off to one side, sit up on something like a blanket or a block. And you can add that kriya, if that's not too much, sa, inspiration, to the base. Exhale, hum, that energy lights you up, radiates. Inhale back, upright, and lower that arm down, and sit back and swing your legs around to the other side. If this hurts your knees or anything, don't sit in a different seat. Set your hand down where your feet are, raise your other arm up, and then expand through your left side. Breath in, sa. Breath out, hum. Inhale back to center, lower that side down, and then swing your legs straight out ahead. The pose is called Dandasana, the stick pose, the staff pose, so your spine is like a staff or a branch. Yogis pay a lot of attention to this center line, the center of energy within us. It manifests in the physical realm as our spinal column, which carries all the nervous impulses. And in our meditation, it helps us move back toward who we are without all of the stories, right? The story and the energy that allows that to even be. That energy rides in
this Shushumna Nadi, the center line. Go ahead and relax from that and find a comfortable seat. So if you're not, that last book we did was hard to do in terms of sitting up all the way. Sit on a bolster or a block or a pair of blankets. Put something under your ankles so you're making a little low chair for yourself. Or if you want a whole chair, you can follow Joe so we can grab a chair out of the back closet. And if that was hard because it was your back was getting tired, sit against the wall and put something behind your middle back or your sacrum. People in the back are already. And if you're not sure about your sleep, just ask. To begin this practice today, we're going to use an alternating breath, one that comes in one nostril and out the other. To do it, take the ring finger and thumb and just let them touch. And then the first two fingers can either rest on your forehead or they can tuck into your palm. Okay? And then these two fingers that are touching are going to come from the top of your nose down to where the bony part ends. I was at the dentist recently and they took a 360 thing, so I could actually see where the bony part of my nose sucked. It was crazy. So you can feel for that right now. Maybe go to the dentist and have them shoot that for your yoga practice. So you're looking for right where does the bone end, because if you press right there, it's a little bit tender. And this is the end of this left side and right side energy lines. So we're going to press alternately on those. First of all, just do a little experiment and see, is one side more open than the other right now? And if that's the case, you're going to start with the more open side as the breath in. So block the opposite side with either your thumb or your ring finger and breathe in a full breath. Close and block both, and then release the breath out through the opposite side. Then come back in the side you breathed out, switch sides, and breathe back out the first side. So as you're going out and back in, and then switch to go out and back. The movements of your fingers doesn't have to be very much. In fact, you need to sort of regulate your breath a little bit. If you find that you're congested and it's hard to get air to move through a nostril, you can allow the air to move through your mouth, but continue to press the points so that you're triggering this alternate side energy. Once you're in the rhythm of this, see if you can begin to lengthen the time of the inhales and the exhales. And you can do that by maybe just holding a little bit more on the side you're breathing in or out of to let the air slow. And if it's comfortable, you can add a retention of breath at the top. So you're holding your breath just so long as it's not going to disturb the next round, so that you're starting to let your breath be longer and smoother. Eventually you'll find that the natural ratio of the breath moves to where the inhale is sort of normal, but the hold can be very long, and the exhale can also be relatively long. And your focus starts to pull more and more inward. So work with your breath in that way, that it's not like a challenge, but rather it's a calming device. The next time you circle around to exhaling through the side you started on, if you remember, if not, just choose one side. Let that be the last exhale. Keep your focus inward. And just pause for a moment, noticing the difference. There's nothing to do right now. I don't know what to do right now. Just being for a moment. Then bring your attention into the heart center, the middle of your chest, the place that feels like where you know things in your heart. And visualize there this glow of energy. When you happen to breathe in, let the energy expand. Visualize that. When you happen to breathe out, let it focus back into a point. And then with each breath now, let the energy pulse open and back again. As you breathe in and the energy is expanding, silently resonate Sat. And when it's coming back in, Yam. Sat. Yam. And I'll leave you on your own to maybe have a release of something, to let go Sat up to the crown of your head, Yam, let that muck out of you, and then come back and see if you can find the harmony again between inward and outward. So I'll leave you on your own to work with those two potential ways. And when you feel calm, when you feel contented, then either let your focus be in the heart center or in the midbrain. And just keep letting go the way you let go off to sleep. But there's nothing to do.
begin to bring yourself back. Notice the rhythm of your breath. Let your chin lower a little towards your chest. Take your hands to the crease line between your thigh and torso and massage your legs from hip to knee, bringing your focus back down low into your seat, into your base. If it's convenient, massage down your shins and down the soles of your feet. And then gently open your eyes, gazing at a point in front of you, and keep your gaze focused until you feel back in the room. And gently take the room back into your awareness. And this concludes our meditation. That's our episode for today. Please head over to patreon.com/peterspodcast and support the podcast at any level that you like. It helps keep this podcast in your ears. Have a wonderful week. Namaste.